Welcome, baseball family. This week we have Sandy's TJ. Joey Votto is not retiring, and we're going to check in on the playoffs right now.
Nine Plus Us presents the Baseball Together podcast with your hosts, Blackjack Brad and Kansas City Little Big Briggy Blue Eyes. And now, Baseball Together.
Welcome, baseball family, to this week's episode of the Baseball Together podcast. I am Brad, and I'm going to get through it today, I promise you. Because I have the support of my guy, Brig. How are you today, Brig?
I'm supportive. Thank you for asking.
That makes me happy. I'm glad to hear it.
We're going to do this.
Yeah, we're going to do it. We're going to get through it, and it will be done.
Yes.
Anyway, but before we do any of that, let's start with this. Baseball family, sports betting has rapidly risen in popularity, and we want to connect you with an opportunity to get started or get ahead. Having multiple sportsbook accounts is the simplest way to maximize your profits, and there has never been a better time to sign up. When you visit our page, signupexpert.com/baseball, that's right, we are baseball on signupexpert.com. You'll be connected to all the sportsbooks in your region, along with a review of each platform and its unique benefits. All these sportsbooks have valuable sign-up offers for new users, and when you register through the Baseball Together link, you will automatically receive the top offer at each one. And the promos, Brig, when you first sign up, that's a good way to like really jump and make some money, because it's free money.
Free 99.
That's right. And so when you use multiple sportsbooks, you can ensure that you always access the best available odds, which is key to successful sports betting. If you want to take advantage of these benefits and support the show, sign up for your next sportsbook at signupexpert.com/baseball. As always, there is a link in the episode description. Okay. I hope, Brig, that is not a sign of things to come, with how much I struggled getting through that one. But with as much as I struggled with doing the intro today, it's likely. So we'll see how it goes.
We never know.
Okay, but first things first, this is something we missed last week because right now we're recording on Sundays because of scheduling conflicts. This happened after the last day of the season. The Angels, I wanted to say, fired Phil Nevin, but that is not what happened. They parted ways with Phil Nevin because he was on a one-year deal, and they're just not rehiring him. Not going to bring him back. Okay,
that's it.
So he will not be the manager of the Angels next year. And I thought this is interesting. Angels GM Perry Minassian said regarding the parting, he said, "By no means does that mean Phil is to blame." Then who is to blame, Perry? Either you're looking in the mirror at this one, or you're pointing upward to Artie Moreno, who loves to run this team, by the way.
He does.
Right?
Yes.
Or are you saying the players just didn't get it done?
What are you saying?
That's what I want to know. If it's not his fault, then whose fault is it? Because it's got to be somebody's.
Yep.
Whose fault do you think it is, Bray?
I think it is Artie Moreno's. That's what I think.
Is it just because of the way they put the team together? Money? Meddling?
Meddling. Yeah. No, I think it has everything to do with meddling. I think that it's I think the culture from the top down is broken. I think that affects decision making. I think that affects player and management confidence. I think that affects front office's decision-making capabilities. I think that affects everything. I think it's meddling. That's what I think.
Yeah. So I was watching Samson last week, and he basically described Artie Moreno as kind of like MLB's version of Jerry Jones. He's the owner who wants to make all the decisions.
There you go.
But the problem is that he's a businessman and not necessarily entirely a baseball man, right?
Right. It's like, it's like Al, what was the guy's name in Oakland for all those years? Al for the Raiders?
Al Davis.
Davis. It's like Al Davis, except Al Davis knew how to win ball games.
Well, and one thing Al Davis would do that you don't like, you kind of, I don't want to say you kind of see this, but you see it a little in a way. I've heard a lot of people talk about how whoever was coaching the Raiders at the time would go over to the sideline phone, pick it up. Yes, sir. And then he would put it down and everybody would go, they're going deep, because it was Al Davis calling down to the coach saying, call a deep ball on your next play. And so they would. They would throw deep every single time the coach got off the phone with Al Davis.
You know who it was a lot of the time? John Madden.
Yeah.
He was the head coach for a long time in Oakland.
Yeah, he was. But the thing that I feel like kind of goes on along those lines is what we saw with the Blue Jays in the wild card round, where it's like the front office has a predetermined plan of how they want things to be, and you're going to stick to it, Mr. Manager.
Yes.
Or is it just Manager? I think we just call him Mr. Manager. I think it's just Manager. Just Manager. But
dude.
Anyway, but I don't feel like the owner should be doing that. If anybody's going to be doing that, it should be the GM, right? It should be coming from Perry Manassian, because he's working with all the Harvard and Yale nerds that they've hired to put all the numbers together for him, right?
That is a fact.
So, anywho, yeah, I agree with that. No, I think you're right, though. It's top down. There are some issues in Anaheim, and I don't think that they will be resolved until he finally sells the team, whenever that may or may not be.
Yes, it may not is more accurate.
Yep. All right. Next, we have what's up?
I said at this point, I think it's may not.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, next up, we have Sandy Alcantara underwent Tommy John surgery officially this week. We knew that he was going to have to, because we found out he had a torn UCL.
Yep.
We don't know how long he was pitching with it. I speculate he's had it for a lot of the season, because he was not himself this year at all.
You've been calling that for a while now.
Yeah, and yeah. Because of the timing of when he had Tommy John surgery, he's going to miss all of the 2024 season, because that rehab process is at least a year.
It's lengthy. Yeah. You can't even pick up a baseball for 4 months, and that's at the earliest.
Yeah. Then
you're only allowed to throw at 30 feet at soft.
Oh, really? Yeah. No torsion on that elbow.
No, nothing at all. You just lob it for 30 feet.
When I was working for a minor league team, we had a guy come in, and he would made his first start since undergoing Tommy John surgery 365 days after surgery. And he was at the bottom of the minor league level in rookie ball, starting for the first time, starting his rehab. So it's a long time. It takes forever. So I guess we'll see him in 2025. Do you think that the Marlins will be okay without him? I think they'll be fine given how he pitched this year.
Yeah, I think so.
Right.
Yeah. So I think, though, that he's not the only guy, right? He's not the only piece holding them together.
Right.
Number one. Number two is they have more pieces to fill. So they need to go out and plug other holes as well. This just gives them a jump start on which holes to plug. That's all I think it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, and their GM, Kim Ng.
Ng or whatever. Yeah.
Ng, I don't know how to say her last name, but she's done a great job in Miami.
Yeah.
Like, Jazz Chisholm was singing her praises when they made the playoffs. Like,
Mama Kim is what he called her.
Yeah. Mama Kim. Like, she's the real one.
So, I think it's really cool.
I think it is really cool. Yeah. She's done a fantastic job since getting to Miami. I think they're going to be good, even better in coming years.
Yeah. I think so. 1 or 2 years for sure.
Uh-huh. So this week, I actually heard this happen live, Brig. I listened to this conversation while I was in the car on, I believe it was on Friday when I texted you about this.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Joey Votto went on the Dan Patrick Show. He's a friend of their show. He goes on, I think, once or twice a year. And like I said before, that's where he really got exposed to his fantastic personality for the first time, I think, outside of Cincinnati.
Yeah. And
he asked me if he was retiring. He said, no, I want to play at least one more year. I was like, cool. I mean, good for him.
Well, the kudos for me goes two ways. The first is kudos for Dan and his team for just asking the question we all want the answer to.
Right.
To me, that was just as big a deal as anything else. But then kudo to kudo kudos to Joey.
Singular kudo. Singular kudo, Brig.
It's a kudo. He gets one kudo for making sure that he didn't hide anything and he wasn't obfuscating and there wasn't any weird around it. He just said no. Direct question, direct answer. Everybody's happy. That's what I think.
Yeah, and the one thing that I thought was really interesting going on with that conversation was that he did basically say that he's got a backup plan. He said if nobody's interested, if nobody wants to pick him up as what he referred to as a backup stick, he is going to go to culinary school.
Get out of here.
I will not. That is what he said. He says he's already been accepted, and he's like ready to start. He's like, if I'm not playing baseball, that's what I'm going to do. I thought that was really cool.
That's really cool.
Yeah. Super cool. A lot of fun for him to go do that. And he's got other hobbies too. Like I could see him like just going and playing a ton of chess and being a school bus driver, you know?
Yeah. I agree.
He likes to do those things.
Driver. That dude would be the funniest school bus driver.
Well, he was doing that when he was hurt.
I know. That's why every time I think about him in that light, I think, man, that dude must have been so much fun just teasing everybody. Because most bus drivers, in my experience, were just checked out, right? They didn't want to have anything to do with anybody.
Because if you're not, you end up like Chris Farley on Billy Madison. Stop yelling on the bus.
Yeah. Yeah. But I was thinking, like, you know, he was probably like really bantery and fun and whatever.
Oh, I'm sure he was. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's fun.
Yeah, so I'm excited that he comes back. I would actually love to have him in Seattle. Like,
for sure.
Love to have him in Seattle. Have the personality, you think he'll end up in mentorship.
Seattle? What are the chances of that?
I don't know, honestly. Like, he did say he wants to go back to Cincinnati, but I don't know if they're going to necessarily have a spot for him. You know, because we talked about that before when he's coming back from his injury. That's like, I don't know. In Seattle, though, like, they need a DH. They need a good backup first baseman. And that kind of personality would go a long way in that clubhouse, I think. So,
well, and they need some experience as well. Some like really good.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of it. And
yeah,
I don't know. I think he'd be a good spot for him. So holding out
hope. I hope for him, and I'm going to say this, I hope for him he doesn't end up in New York.
I don't think he wants that at this point. You know?
Of course not.
I think he's kind of like, I don't need the noise. I just want to go somewhere I can be a backup stick and
have fun.
Yeah, and be good with it. And this is the other thing too, Brig, is that the Mariners have Gino Suarez and Luis Castillo, who both played, both great clubhouse guys who played with Joey Votto in Cincinnati.
Yeah. So, you're right about that.
That could help. That could help.
It could. It really could.
Yeah. So we'll
and
see.
And he could help. I don't know. I like it.
I like it a lot. I like it a whole lot. Okay. We have one more thing before we take a short break. Speaking of first baseman, Pete Alonso, the polar bear himself, has hired a new agent.
Yep.
And wouldn't you know it? Of course. I feel like. So first off, he hired Scott Boras's company, Boras Corp, as his new agency. And I feel like Scott Boras is like the vulture, you know, kind of like, or even the jackal, just kind of hanging around the outside. Anytime there's a big player coming up on free agency, just kind of like just lingering. Mm-hmm. And then eventually they send him just kind of like send him an email like, hey, I hear word on the street.
Yeah.
You're going to be a free agent next year. Would you like somebody to represent you who is not going to take no for an answer and will not accept an extension?
Works every time.
Every time. Carlos Correa is the first guy that comes to my mind when that like basically feels like that happened with him.
Right. It's the only one that didn't get exactly what he wanted. And now look at him. So I don't know. It's kind of tough to argue with what Boras and his company are able to do. Even though he feels villainous, right? He feels like the easiest.
It depends on which side is good, right?
Right. And that's the thing. But like, there's so much of this narrative around Scott Boras being the bad guy. And we have perpetuated that in the past. So I'm not going to claim that we haven't felt that way or still don't or whatever. Right. It's just interesting how easy it is to claim that he's the bad guy and that they're vultures and whatever, when, you know, depending on whose side of the conversation you're talking about.
This is the thing, is that he does his job, right? He's very, very, very good at his job, obviously, right?
Yep. Yes.
And he's not just, I don't want to say he's the reason I said jackal is because he's circling around the outside and he's picking the primest pieces of meat. He's picking the best guys who are going to be coming on the market very soon.
Yeah.
Right. And the thing that gets me is that he's acting in his own interest and he never feels like he's acting in the player's interest. Granted, acting in his own interest benefits the player.
Totally.
Right.
Totally.
But it never feels like it. Every time he gets a player a big contract, it feels disingenuous. And I get it. It's all business, right? He's trying to make himself more money, which in turn makes the players more money. They're just like, you know, if that's what it takes.
Yeah. Whatever. Yeah, yeah.
You know? I get that side of it. It just feels scuzzy because I know that he's, or I don't know that I know, but I definitely feel like he's acting in his own interest. And that's the part that feels super scuzzy to me. Right.
Well, we have examples of other agents. I mean, Rachel Luba is the first one that comes to mind, right? Where she presents herself as being all in for the ball player, and then whatever comes her way is awesome. Right. I don't know if that's how it actually is, but that's the message that comes across. Whereas to your point, Scotty B's messaging, the optics of it are the opposite. So I don't know. I don't know what's right or wrong.
Because I just have visions, Brig, of him anytime he gets on the phone with the team, that as he's negotiating, he's got them on like speakerphone while he's flipping through remodeling catalogs for his office.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Yeah. Like, we're going to take up another 60. Oh, I can go here. Let's go another 70.
Yeah.
Because I like that color right there.
Yeah.
But that's
how he's negotiating millions and millions and millions of dollars while he's standing at the tailor and they're measuring and stitching all the his custom sleeve, you know.
Yeah. Yes, that's how it feels. Shopping, spending the money before he gets it because he knows he's gonna get it.
He's gonna get it. Yeah, you're right.
But you're right. Anyway,
that's good.
All right.
Before we go, why don't you tell about Wade versus take game? A break. We're always asking what you think about the topics that we bring up on the show. And now there's a quick and easy way to share your thoughts with us. We have partnered with Versus Game to bring you games where you can make money from participating polls and trivia. That's right. So if you're on the winning side of a poll, or if you get a trivia question right, you can win real money. You can play for free, or you can buy ticket bundles to play against other listeners and Versus Game users. So head over to btpod.onversus.com on your mobile browser and sign up to play polls and trivia on the Baseball Together page there. So that's btpod.onversus.com. Sign up to play Versus Game with us. And with that, we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to talk playoff baseball. Welcome back, baseball family. As you know, it is October, and if you're watching National League games, it probably is Red October, okay? So, sorry, Braves fans, I did not mean to alienate you with that comment. However, the Phillies fans are very excited about that. And basically, we have to play both sides, because that's how we feel, okay? So, here's the deal. Let's talk about Braves-Phillies. The Phils are up 1-0. And by the time this comes out, game two will have been completed. And because we were recording on Sunday night. In fact, we are in the middle of ALDS game two in Houston. And we'll bring you updates as we go. Currently, Phils are up 1-0 in the NLDS, played in Atlanta right now. What I want to know, is this the same old Braves, Brad? Because they've never, ever, ever, never, ever, never beaten the Phillies in a playoff series. Not even one time.
You know,
what's going on?
There is such thing as October fatigue.
Of course.
How many guys played 150 games, something like that, for the Braves before they got a day off?
Lots of them.
Yeah. I think there's something to that.
Hmm.
we'll get to it later because I have more thoughts on October fatigue.
Okay.
But I think it's a real thing. There's a reason a lot of teams will rest their guys. And granted, yes, you've got to try to win every single game because you could be like Seattle, who kind of trotted out a B team in June.
Yeah.
And tossed a game out there and then you missed playoffs by a game. Right? Kike yeah. Hernandez talked about that a couple weeks ago with Mookie Betts on a podcast. He said, I got out there and gave up a walk-off home run in like the 16th inning or something, like the 16th inning, I think is what it was. Yeah. He's like, and then we ended up playing game 163. He's like, I was like torn up about the thought that my team might miss the playoffs because I gave up a walk-off home run as a stupid position player pitching in an extra inning game. Right?
Totally. Yeah.
So I get it. I get it. You want to have your best guys out there every single day and try to win every single game as much as you can. But there are times you've got to be able to trust your bench and give those guys a rest. And I also understand people are going to say the players are soft now because used to everybody played 160, 61, 62 games.
Yeah, that's true.
But given medical advances we have now, we understand that's not good for you or your arm.
Yeah, 100% accurate.
So,
yeah,
I think there's something to that, though, that these teams come in here fresh. And I think we might be seeing that the Phillies have a deeper bench.
Well, let's also talk
or just about fresher.
Well, so is it fresh because of momentum or is it fresh because they didn't like the Braves had those days off?
Yeah, they had a week off
during the wild card. Yeah, so, I mean, we come back to this, I feel like, every postseason where we have to discuss and question whether that bye week is worth it or not. And here we are dealing with it again.
Right.
Yeah. Is that the problem?
Because the only team that won game one who had the bye was the Astros, right?
That's it. The only one. Everybody else.
Yeah. Won. Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe it works in football because everybody can get healthy and there's a lot more to the resting process in football. Maybe somebody needs to figure it out in baseball.
Yeah, because this can't possibly be an anomaly at this point. It just can't.
Right.
Like, yeah. It doesn't qualify anymore. Something. Mm-hmm. There's something about it, and we don't have all the answers right now, but we do have the question, and we are going to start looking into it. I do. I want to start looking into why. I want to go back as far as bye weeks have gone and count the number of game one losses.
I think for it's what, 2 years?
Like, I just want to know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think it's something we keep an eye on, though. We keep tracking it. And then eventually when we can, we talk to a team about it and say, what do you think you need to do differently to buck this trend? Because it really is interesting that the teams who have the bye weeks don't do well. And players have spoken out against it, too. When they first brought it up, they said, I don't want that. Totally. I want to keep playing.
Yeah.
And so did the Rangers possibly play the scenario?
Did they play down a little bit?
Maybe they didn't want that bye week.
Interesting.
But I don't think I think if you can take an opportunity to either skip the Rays or play them, I think you're going to skip it, though, right?
I think you think.
You would think that you wouldn't
pick the Rays
over not playing them.
Yeah.
Even though they
But then they trounced them, so I don't know. That doesn't make any sense. One thing we do have to talk about was the catcher's interference call in Atlanta last
night. The phantom catcher's interference call?
Correct. And that is exactly what I wanted to say. I watched it. I didn't see catcher's interference. The call on the field was not overturned, and it was not confirmed. The TV broadcasters did a really good job of distinguishing between the call on the field being confirmed and the call on the field standing. It was not irrefutable evidence to have overturned it, but that also means that they couldn't outright say the guy got it right either. And
right.
Based on what I saw, it was a big fat rut-row got it wrong. There was no catcher's interference at all. And if you watch closely, the ball hit the bat and fouled back.
Right. Well, and you look at the path of the barrel of the bat, too.
It
didn't look like it was anywhere near the glove.
It didn't even hit a lace. I didn't see it hitting a strand of leather hanging off at all. I mean, it was I would say it was laughable, but it was disgusting, is what it was.
If it had happened in June, I would laugh about it. But correct. The fact that it happened in October is what really, really grinds my gears, right?
Me too. Yeah.
That you expect the umpires to be able to get it right. And I don't know. Like, so much of me has lost so much faith in umpires. And I know people are going to say, go out and do it yourself. I have. It's not easy. I get it.
Correct.
But I'm also not getting paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to do this as my full-time job.
And have been for years now.
Yeah.
In order to be even considered for a playoff position.
Right. Yep.
Here's the thing. Here's the other thing. I'm less upset. Like, you could choose to be upset at the team on the ground, right? At the umpire crew on the ground, specifically the guy behind home plate. You can be upset at him. That's just fine. But I'm really angry at the team in New York that has access to all of the camera angles, all of the technology, the ability to slow everything way down. And I would think more than just a handful of eyes and ears to talk it over. So
right.
that's the group I'm upset with. That's like, and if they saw something we didn't see, where is the very public evidence, right? And it's just a big echo chamber. Every time they drop it over to review and it goes back to New York. That's who I'm going to place my blame with.
Yeah. And it is really frustrating because it's sometimes you see something and like, as you're watching the review, you're like, oh yeah, for sure. Like it's going to get overturned, but then they come back and it's like, I feel like somebody has somebody's back here.
Yes. Right?
Like, yes. That's really what it feels like. And sometimes, and I don't want to say there's collusion or like, it's like shady or anything. Right. But it feels like that. But there's other times where you see something that's like so certain. You're like, oh yeah, this is going to be real quick. And then they take way too long on it and they come back and you're like, wait, are we sure that's what they told the umpire? Are we sure he just doesn't have his buddies back out on second base in this situation? Like,
right.
You know, like it like really does feel like that sometimes both ways that it's just like,
yeah.
But then in New York, they're not going to come out and be like, oh, he said, you know, because that makes everybody look bad.
Totally. Makes
the system look broken, which
it is. It might and I be. Think it is.
Yeah.
There's a good chance. I think the fact that there's so much opportunity for us to question it is the problem at it. Maybe not the root problem. There may be something deeper going on, but the fact that we can sit here and go, okay, clearly from point A, the call on the field, to point B, the challenge, with C being what they show on the video replay board on the field and what they show on television, which is very often the same thing. And then what they're seeing in New York, that's the gap from C to D, right? What we can see versus what they can see. Where's the gap? What do we not get to see that you can see?
And
what
I wonder,
conversations?
Because they show a lot of different angles, right? That like, as they're going through the replay, they show us a lot of different angles. And I don't know if we're seeing the same thing they're seeing, but at the same time though, I'm sure they're not looking at a single screen. I'm sure they've got like a quad box going, you know, whatever.
Yeah, for sure.
Everything and figure out how to get it right. But it really is just like so frustrating. And it's like in the NBA after the Tim Donaghy thing, it's like, are some of these games fixed, you know? And then the NBA came out and they're like, we're going to be transparent and let you know guys missed calls. So they have the last 2 minute report that talk about that go through every single missed call, like so-and-so called a foul at a minute 25 when he shouldn't have, you know, it was a clean steal. It's like, okay, that doesn't do anything, but let me know that the referees are getting it wrong because they're not correcting anything.
Right.
Right. And so it's like, I know the NBA has done that to help remedy the situation and instill confidence in the fans, but I don't think that's the right thing to do. I don't think it would be right for Major League Baseball to come out and be like, yeah, their challenge, they should have won their challenge. That wasn't catcher's interference.
They're never going to do that.
You know, because that throws the umpires under the bus. That instills even less confidence in us and the umpires and the replay process.
Yes.
But then it's like, okay, so who else is Major League Baseball willing to throw under the bus?
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know that there's necessarily a right solution to the problem besides them just doing better or maybe citing what they did or didn't see.
That's what I need. I need better communication, and I need it to not leave the stadium. I don't want an umpiring crew,
right,
or some supervision guy back, whoever, wherever, somewhere else. Put like with the old, like the NFL, put me in a box. Let me go over every single thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then we powwow. Hey, yeah. Did you see this? Come look over here. Yeah. Okay. I saw it. Get back in the box. Yeah. That's what I saw. Vote on it on the field and be done.
That's the thing that makes me the absolute craziest about this whole thing is that they send it off to New York and the umpires just standing there with the headsets on.
Yeah. He's like, I don't know. I'll let you know what they say.
Okay.
As though my authority on the field is only good until somebody says, I don't believe you. And then I got to go call mom and dad. Like, right? That's it.
Yes. Do the NFL thing where you have an eye in the sky, or college football, how they have their replay booth, right? Have somebody in the stadium. And you know what, Brig? The umpire union should love this because you know what it does? It creates a job.
It sure it's exactly
way more jobs. That adds one more umpire, if not two, to every single crew.
That's right.
So,
and their job is to be the final decision maker. Mm-hmm. And I know they have a crew chief. I got it. But maybe the crew chief is the fifth umpire on the field. I don't know. There's got to be something that can be done. The fact that it leaves ground zero and goes to somebody else is the segment of the process that makes me squeamish.
And from the very beginning, that's the one that got me, that I was like, why? Why have a review center in New York instead of having somebody at the stadium who can queue it up for you?
I don't understand. Let's move on. One of the things we have to do is to remind everybody in the baseball world to keep your trash to yourself. Stop throwing it on the field. I don't care who you're rooting for. I don't care where it is. That is just, it's just not okay, man. I don't care how frustrated you are. I'll tell you what I told my kids, which is we need to find more appropriate ways to express our emotions. That's it.
Yep. That's spot on. Thanks. That's a great way to put it. I like that.
Let's move to the Dodgers and the D-backs, all right?
Oh, boy.
The D-backs are now... Oh, man. Did anybody see this coming? Like, just wait. I know that there's half of a bunch of people who hoped for it, but didn't feel like this was ever going to happen. The other half is like, no way. And then here we are. So the D-backs went up
1-0. Yeah, tell what happened, and then I'll tell you something I found after.
Okay, the D-backs went up 1-0. They won game one on Saturday. Oh, 11-2. I don't even know. Like, how else are you supposed to feel? The Dodgers, two runs came in the eighth inning. It took them to the eighth inning to score a run. They came in the eighth inning when they were already down 11-0. Now, here's the thing that just... is insane. It's just insane. Clayton Kershaw had the shortest start, not just of his postseason efforts, but of his entire career. And his postseason capabilities have been called into question for years now. Years. And here we go again. And the poor guy, God, I really do feel so bad for him. And it sucks that we have to bring it up and call him out. But here's what happened. Clayton Kershaw's final line from Saturday's game one in the NLDS was one third of an inning pitched. He recorded one out. In that time, he gave up six runs. They're all his, obviously. They're all earned. He gave up one walk, one home run, and he threw 35 pitches. That's it. Took him 35 pitches to not only record an out, but to get called to get the hook. They got him out. This is by far the worst of it. Okay? This is as bad as it'll ever get. How could it possibly get worse than this?
Right. Yeah.
But why is this the problem with Clayton Kershaw in the playoffs, Brad?
So I have a theory
okay.
about this. Because I was texting one of my friends the other day. She said, why? Like, what the heck? Like, why is he one of the greatest regular season pitchers ever, but he cannot do it in the postseason? I thought it's got to be, and I don't want to say he's out of shape, but it's got to have something to do with conditioning. Because think about this, Brig. Every year, every single year, this is playoff Kershaw. This is what we get. Like I said, this is the worst of all that we've seen. But it's somewhere along these lines. It's somewhere, you know, and after the whole thing with the Astros, we kind of chalked it up to like, oh, they knew it was coming. That's why it got that way. But it's
totally happened fair.
Before then, since then. The only time that he's been regular season Kershaw during the playoffs was during 2020.
Short season. Right.
Short season. And so I'm like, man, it's got to be something to do with the length of the season that he just does not have it by the time he gets to October. And he's facing the best.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Like, that's the only thing I can think of. And I found this on X the other day. Bob Nightingale, this was before game one, said Dodgers manager Dave Roberts says this is the best Clayton Kershaw has felt in the last couple of months entering game one on Saturday. And then the thread, Brig, this was before the game. The thread, people were like, so we all know how that's going to go because we've seen this before.
Oh no.
There were people all through that thread saying it's not going to go well. It's not going to go well. He's going to get shelled. And I was reading that. I was like, we should have seen this coming. Because time and time again, this is what happens.
Yeah.
I think we don't want it to happen. We want to give him the benefit of the doubt because of who he is.
Absolutely. Right?
We're just like, man, he's going to make the next step. He's going to make the next, but he just doesn't. He hasn't. And I feel bad. I feel badly about it because I would love for him to do really well. I love Clayton Kershaw.
I agree.
Right. But it's unfortunate that this is who he is in the postseason, apparently.
I just looked it up. His regular season ERA is 2.48. That's along his whole career. His postseason ERA along his career is 4.49. He's pitched 194 and a third innings in the postseason. That's nearly two runs on the ERA of a bump from regular season to postseason.
Does that include his 162 ERA from Saturday?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's true because it's probably not going to have a whole lot of weight if it's only one out.
Nope.
So.
They're saying, and I don't want to give this a ton of clout yet, but what I did read in a headline from yesterday, and I'm reading it right now, Dodgers expect Clayton Kershaw to pitch again versus the Diamondbacks despite embarrassing start in NLDS game one.
Yeah.
That is from CBS Sports. Who knows where the source truly comes
Dave
from.
Dave Roberts.
He said he's going to put him back out there.
The only decision is to pitch him in game four, if that's what it comes to. So he's going to go back out there. So, yeah. And okay. I think you have to. You have to. You have to give him an opportunity to redeem himself.
You do. You do. But why not? Okay, so when Texas, and we'll get into this, what, next or so? Texas, we all thought that they were going to bring in Dunning to start game one, but they didn't. Okay. They brought in Andrew Haney. And Haney came out and threw three and two-thirds. And then they brought out Dunning, and he threw two innings. Why not do something like that with Kershaw? Why not start somebody else, get him through two innings, put a lid on everything, set some kind of tone, and then trot Clayton Kershaw out? Or flip it. I don't know. You got to do something different.
I think he goes out there with a short leash.
Yeah. But how much shorter do you get than a third of an inning?
One out. Yeah.
He's got to face three batter minimum, right?
Yeah, it's true.
So I don't know what else. What are you going to do?
I don't know. I have no idea how to, like, I don't know how to handle it. But I think out of respect for a guy, you've got to send him back out there, though.
Right. I agree. You got to give him another
chance. Especially somebody like him.
But you don't have to start him.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. Clayton Kershaw met the bed. All right. The D-backs put up three more in the second. But ultimately, it came down to their they slaughtered the Dodgers. It was crazy.
Yeah.
By the time this comes out, we will have seen game two, and we'll bring your analysis for that on Thursday. So stay with us when we go live on YouTube, Twitch, and on Facebook Thursday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern time. All right. Now, Brad's got something he finds really interesting about the American League going into Sunday night's games. Why don't you tell us that, Brad?
Right. This is super interesting. So the best division, or what was touted as the best division all year long, right, until recent, I want to say until like 2 weeks left in the season, really, or maybe a month left in the season, was the American League East.
For sure. Okay?
But the American League West got real sneaky there at the very end.
And they did.
Competitive. But so far in the playoffs, coming into Sunday night's game, coming into this is before game two between the Twins and the Astros, the AL East is 0-6 so far in this postseason. The AL West is 5-0. But currently we have the Twins up 6-0 in the seventh inning. And that could end up going to 5-1. But Chaz McCormick just dropped one into left field, and that was a little bit of a disastrous defensive play for the Twins. So
it was pretty shallow left. And I mean, it was perfectly, sixes between the left fielder and Correa at short.
It was close. This is the thing. Correa should have peeled off and let the left fielder get it. He shouldn't have been out there.
100%.
He could have made a sliding catch and gotten that.
If not even sliding. He could have. If Correa's big old body wouldn't have been in the way, that guy could have probably sailed right underneath it.
He slammed on the brakes.
He did.
So,
but Pablo Lopez is on the bump right now, and he's thrown 99 pitches with 6 1/3. So everything's fine. With a 6-run lead, it's gonna be all right
for now, you would think, but
yeah, you would. That's right, but
you never know with Houston. That's the crazy thing, you never know with those dudes.
You're right.
Anyway, let's talk.
Okay, Rangers and Orioles. This is like, I don't even know. Like, I know last season and the beginning of this season, I was talking about how the Rangers are. They're good. I like them, etc. I was saying something special's happening, whatever. But I started to discount them through the latter part of the season. I think it makes sense why. But this is super rut-row right now for Bird fans, right? This is bad. Game one, Texas wins 3-2. Super competitive game. Really exciting. Really loved it. Kind of a bummer for Birds fans, for the Baltimore fans. But ultimately, not a like sky is falling situation. It was a tight game, super fun. Rangers pitching is what crushed it, right? The Haney came out 3 2/3 of innings pitched, 2 hits, 1 earned run, 1 walk. Okay,
that's the thing right here. Okay, go ahead. Okay. And I think this is Bochy right here. Go ahead.
This is it. Then Dunning, whom I said earlier we thought was going to start, he comes out 2 innings pitched, 2 hits, 1 earned run, 1 walk. Okay. And then the bullpen allowed only 1 hit for the remainder of the 3 1/3 innings. And they walked a few people, but then the rest of the defense shut it all down and it didn't matter.
And this is how Brig, you work your way around a bad bullpen. You have a great starting rotation, really, really good starters. You work them through and try to make yourself a 3-game series, get yourself some rest so those guys can be ready for the championship series, and you piggyback them.
Yeah, just like that.
Give your guys, Jordan Montgomery and Nathan Eovaldi, give them a chance to go deep. But a guy like Haney, piggyback him with Dunning. Absolutely.
Perfect.
For sure.
And they crushed it, man. One thing we do need to address, the Gunnar Henderson was on first base in the 8th inning, and he attempted to steal second base. They threw him out by a mile. Jonah Heim did from behind the plate. And we learned today that Aaron Hicks was supposed to receive the hit and run signal and just didn't. He didn't even swing at it. The ball was away. He did nothing to he didn't swing, right? Didn't even lean in front of the ball, nothing. And so Jonah Heim had an absolute clear shot at second base, threw a bullet, pinpoint accurate as he does, Gunnar Henderson was out by a mile. Serious problem. And anyway, the cool part about this story is that Gunnar Henderson didn't do anything to send Aaron Hicks under the bus. Not a thing. He could have. That is
cool.
He didn't. It wasn't until later, after he'd been asked about it and everybody let him off the hook, it wasn't until later that we learned that Hicks missed the signal.
Yeah, that's, I like that. That's my always reminds me of Little Big League when he sends the hit and run sign out there and the batter ignores it. Yeah. And they're like, you second guessing yourself there? And he's like, no, I think if I'd have to do it again, I'd call hit and run.
Oh, yeah. Shoot. So then game two says Texas wins 11-8. And this wasn't, I'm going to say it wasn't as close as the.
It didn't feel that close. There was a time it was like, what was it? It was like 8-5 and the Orioles had the bases loaded. And I was like, okay, here we go. But then they didn't do anything with it. Right.
Exactly.
So
now this comes on the back of a grand salami. Texas had 5 runs going into the third. They scored 9 runs by the start of the fourth. Mitch Garver hit a grand slam in the third, but until then, I think this is the coolest part. All of Texas's runs came on singles and doubles. It was just straight up baseball, just small ball. Super cool. Yeah. Now, Garver's grand slam is only the second postseason grand slam in Rangers history. So for you trivia buffs out there, that's really exciting.
That's crazy.
Isn't that? I thought that was really cool. Mm-hmm. So Baltimore came up with 3 runs. Well, they had 5 runs, and then they had a 3-run ninth inning, but it was a little too late by then. So
yeah, that's – I was looking at that because I was actually surprised the final score was 11-8. But it's kind of like, you know, the Orioles, I think, given their recent offensive struggles – they can kind of go in and be like, hey, fellas, we put up 8 today. Like, we're heading in the right direction. It's like, yeah, but we gave up 11. So
yeah.
What do, you know?
Yeah, it doesn't feel like they put up 8. It feels like they squoze 8 in.
Yes.
Somehow. I don't know. It just has a different vibe to it.
But you know all what, right. though, Greg? I don't think Baltimore gets swept. I don't know if they'll win the series because I think they've got some offensive issues they're dealing with that go way deeper than anything that this series has shown, because they showed a graphic before this game today where like Cedric Mullins was like 2 for his last 35 and he wasn't the only guy struggling like that. But they've had some major slumps the last that's like 2 weeks.
Mullins is due. Yeah. And he spent so much time on the IL this year that you wondered if he was ever going to come back and be hot. Same with Mountcastle. He spent so much time on the IL this season. And it's a little bit too bad because I feel like the rest of the pieces are there. It's just interesting to see what a couple of guys struggling can do to bring a team, bring a team down. But let's wrap this up with the Astros versus the Twins. Houston leads the series 1-0 after a 6-4 win on Saturday. This game was closer than I expected it to be. A lot closer. And it was very exciting after Justin Verlander tossed 6 scoreless innings.
That's the thing dominated. Is you get guys like Verlander who come out there and it's like, well, this is not a very fun game to watch.
Yeah.
I get he's doing his thing, but man.
Yeah. He left with a 5-0 lead and the game was obviously pretty well in hand after the 6th. So, the Twins homered a couple of times to make it close in the 7th, and then Yordan Alvarez answered back in the bottom half of the 7th inning, a little insurance run there. But anyway, Framber Valdez.
This is game 2, sorry.
Yeah, in game 2, which we're watching right now, it's currently 6-0 in favor of Minnesota. Top of the 8th, no outs. Kepler at the plate, Montero on the bump, throwing 14th, 15th pitches. So it looks like Pablo Lopez got taken out. So that's
He went 7 full.
Yeah, that's really awesome. But he doesn't have any. He doesn't have his jacket on or anything. He doesn't look like he's gone to the clubhouse. Do you think they'll bring him back for the bottom of the eighth?
No, I don't think so. They don't need to. I think it makes perfect sense to pull him at this point. He tossed to Jim. You don't send him out there just for the sake of sending him out there when he's already thrown 100 plus pitches at this point.
I agree.
Let your bullpen wrap it up, seal this thing off, and go worry about game three on what, Tuesday? On Tuesday, yeah.
Yeah, Tuesday. Yeah, in Minnesota.
There you go.
In front of the home team. Oh, boy, in front of the home crowd. That's exciting for Minnesota fans.
Well, this is the thing. This is the thing you always want when you're the road team. Like, lose game one, no big deal. Who cares? Because you win game two. If you split that series, you now have home field advantage until you lose at home.
That's right.
So, because if they win games three and four, it's done. And they never have to go back to Houston. At this point, like, the Dodgers are in big trouble because they've lost at home.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, well, shoot.
I agree. So we'll bring you Pablo Lopez's final line and exactly what happened at the finale of this game two on Thursday, and by then you'll have game three. But Framber Valdez got touched on a bit in this one. He threw 4 1/3 innings, 5 runs, all of which he earned, 5 strikeouts, 3 walks, and he gave up 1 home run. And that's a little uncharacteristic of Framber Valdez. And
I feel like that's been him this year, though. And then, because if he gets out there and he pitches, if this series goes five, and he goes out there and pitches game five, he's going to shut him down. He's going to go 6-7 innings and give up 3 hits, no runs, and strike out 8. You know, he was very up and down this year. Like, his very next outing after he threw that that no hitter, he got beat up,
shelled. Yeah, totally.
So I wouldn't be surprised if that happens. If we see him again in this series and in the postseason.
Final tidbit for you: Carlos Correa has 2 or 3 RBIs in this game so far. I can't remember exactly, but
he's got at least 3. I'm going to check to make sure he doesn't have more, because he might have more, but since we put this together.
Yeah. Well, I'll read this now while you're looking at that. He's got 3 RBIs. Okay. Carlos Correa, 3 RBIs. He is now the 3rd in postseason history, all-time baseball, postseason history RBIs. So let me say that in a different way that makes way more sense. He has now the 3rd most RBIs in Major League Baseball postseason history. That's what there I meant go. To say. Okay, so this puts him at 63 or 64. I can't.
63. It's
63. He did it on a bases loaded single and drove in 2 runs. That's 63. Now he sits only behind Manny Ramirez at number 2. He has 78 career RBIs in the postseason. And none other than Bernie Williams holds the number 1 slot with 80 postseason RBIs.
You know that I was a little surprised that it was Bernie Williams at the top, but then at the same time, I wasn't really.
No way.
Because he was the dude. He's the dude who comes through. Like,
he always came through smooth as smooth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For sure.
Anyway, baseball family, we wanted to thank you for being here with us and for the postseason. Just another quick plug about Thursday Night Live. That'll be on YouTube, Twitch, and Facebook Live. We will bring you that 9 p.m. Eastern. That's every week during the season, Thursday nights. We'll bring you updates from the playoff races up to that point at that time. If you like what we're doing here on the podcast and you want another way to support us, the quickest and easiest way is to do it on Patreon. You go to patreon.com, search Baseball Together. We have tiers of support starting at $1, and they run up all the way to $500. That's $500. Brad put that together. It's super exciting. Please go on and look at what that is and see if it's worth your time and effort, because it is sure going to be worth ours. We are really hoping somebody will finally take us up on it, because it just needs to happen. I feel like the world needs some of us to do some of the things that are on there. All That's right. Go look at what that is.
Lots of fun. But baseball family, don't forget to like, subscribe, rate, and review wherever you can, anywhere. Especially on the YouTube machine. We reached 500 subs this last week. Thank you so much for helping us reach that goal. Next, we're going to shoot for, let's say 750 is where we want to be next. So if you can help us get there, if you are not subscribed already, be sure you do that as well. And we will catch you on Thursday night.